أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، باعث الأنبياء والمرسلين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا سيد الخلق أجمعين، حبيب إله العالمين، أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المكرمين المنتجبين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأراضين، روحي وأرواح العالمين لتراب مقدمه الفداء، ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين إلى قيام يوم الدين. For the hastening the return of our Imam, let's recite the salawat. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. We thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for the opportunity to be able to read and study and discuss more of the words of the Ahlul Bayt, Salamullah alayhim ajma'in, from the book Al-Kafi, which is by far the most reliable book of hadith that we have. And we have selected, we're going through parts of, we can't go through the entire book, it's very time-consuming. I mean, at least I don't foresee us being able to do that. It requires a lot of time, as you have seen. We only go over a few hadith every week, and that is really going to allow us to only be selective. So the chapter we're going through is Babu Bad'il Adhan wal Iqama wa Fadlihima, the beginning of Adhan and Iqama and their value. Wa Ajrihima, I believe it had in it as well, their reward. And I believe we arrived at hadith number 18, that's what I remember. And looking at hadith number 17, it seems like if we haven't covered it, we, meaning the wording exactly, the content is something we've already discussed in ways, and we will be coming back to hadith, meaning there will be hadith that will tell us something a little more general and as a principle that will elaborate on some of on this hadith and some of the hadith that we had previously. We'll get to them and I'll point that out. Anyhow, so hadith number 18 of this chapter, Muhammad ibn Ismail an al-Fadl ibn Shadhan. We've had him. Muhammad ibn Ismail is one of the teachers of Sheikh al-Kulaini. Some claim we know less about him, and there's discussion about who exactly is this man. It's enough to know that Sheikh Kulaini, this great scholar, great narrator of hadith, someone who spent time with so many great teachers, refers to him for hadith as a teacher and brings his hadith in a collection that he put together in order to put what he considers to be religion, what he knows to be from God. In other words, he trusts very much. He brings that and he doesn't quote him one or two times. That, for me, is sufficient to know that whatever the rest of his name is, he is a great man. Muhammad ibn Ismail, an al-Fadl ibn Shadhan, he's a little more well-known. He's also a great scholar. An ibn Abi Umayr, we've had him. Muhammad ibn Ziyad, if I remember his actual name, but his father's is more known as with his kunya, Abu Umayr. The father of Umayr is the father of this person who is Muhammad, Muhammad ibn Ziyad, otherwise known as Ibn Abi Umayr. An Jamil ibn Darraj, a companion of Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayh, قال سألت أبا عبد الله عليه الصلاة والسلام عن المرأة عليها أذان وإقامة قال لا. I asked Imam al-Sadiq صلى الله عليه of a woman, upon her is there an adhan? Is there an adhan on her? Does she have the responsibility of doing adhan or iqama, either one of them? Is there such a responsibility on her? The Imam says, قال لا. Keep that. That was a very basic translation. The next hadith is very much similar. So I'm going to read that too. Then we're going to come back and discuss both of these together. Hadith number 19. Abu Ali al-Ash'ari. Of course, that's not what's written here. His name is written. Ahmad ibn Idris. I apologize. Ahmad ibn Idris is also known as, his kunya is Abu Ali, and he is one of the Ash'aris, who are originally Yemeni in Qum, one of the teachers of Shaykh al-Kulayni. An Ahmad ibn Muhammad, which is either the Ash'ari, perhaps more likely, I'm not sure, or Barqi, either one is reliable. An al-Husayn ibn Sa'id, this is one of the scholars of Ahwaz, the southwestern city in Iran. I don't know if I mentioned in this session or another session that I don't know that region to be called Iraq. I actually did find in one of the hadith, I believe, or accounts of that time that Ahwaz and that region, which is predominantly Arab even today, that was also referred to as Iraq, because obviously the borders of countries is not our discussion right now. That's not, they didn't have borders back then. It was part of the Islamic Empire, and they were all part of the same country, if we were to use terminology of today. But in terms of the names of regions, regions had names, even within countries. Today, it's somewhat similar, but we have defined them a little more, and we call them either states or provinces. But a little older, they had regions had names. This region of Ahwaz and perhaps surrounding cities more south, closer to Basra, which is what Arabs call Muhammara, or Farsi speakers call Khurramshahr, or Abadan, which I'm not fully sure, but apparently there was, if not today, there was a village or a city called Ubadan with an Ayn in Arabic. Perhaps it's the same, they just wrote that with an alif in Farsi, which either way, the Iranians and Farsi speakers don't have the letter Ayn, and it would sound like a Hamza anyway. Anyhow, that area is also referred to as Iraq. So Al-Husayn ibn Sa'id, there's great scholars in Ahwaz, as there were in Kufa and Basra and elsewhere. One of them is Al-Husayn ibn Sa'id. His brother Al-Hasan is also one of the scholars. They're an Fadala ibn Ayyub. He's a very well-known companion, scholar, narrator of hadith. An Aban ibn Uthman. An Abi Maryam al-Ansari. Rahmatullah alayhim ajma'in. These are great people, all of them. Qal sami'tu Abu Abdullah alayhi salatu wa salam yaqum. Abu Maryam al-Ansari says, I heard Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhi say, Iqamatu al-mar'a an tukabbira وتشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأن محمدا عبده ورسوله. The iqama of a woman is for her to do takbir. In Arabic, words tend to have the ability to contain more meaning, not in the way that some suggest. What I mean by that is, if the imam were to suggest that it's the takbir the way others do it, which means there's two takbir, he would have said, "An tukabbira takbiratayn." An tukabbira, she does Allahu Akbar once. Say Allahu Akbar once. Wa tashhada an la ilaha illallah. Again, to say that this suggests that she only does that part of the iqama, do those parts of it, that would have been worded differently. What is clear from this wording is that the iqama of a woman is to say, Allahu Akbar, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, ashhadu anna Muhammad al-Rasulullah. And that's her iqama, it's done. Now that we've covered these two, one hadith in regards to a woman and her adhan or iqama, the question was, عَلَيْهَا أَذَانٌ وَإِقَامَةٌ. Upon her, there is an adhan or iqama, with a question mark. I don't know how to word that, because obviously sentence structure is different in these two languages. But I wanted to try to be as accurate with the wording as I can. We'll come back to that. The Imam said, no, that's not the case. And in this one, the Imam says, the iqama of a woman is this. This is what she should do for her iqama. A couple of things that need to be said here. The narrations are reliable, they're chains of transmission, and it's not one. And there's nothing in them that contradicts the Quran or any other hadith we have read so far. And if there is any hadith later on, we'll have to figure that out. But for so far, we didn't see anything. Sometimes the wording of the hadith had the word man in it. In those hadith, we said generally it's hard to conclude that the word rajul refers to a man many times in many languages, not just in Arabic. A man, the word would be used as a man, but what would be intended and understood by the speaker and the listener is that it's a person. Gender is not included in that. And if we didn't have these two specific hadith that talk about the adhan and iqama of a woman, we would have concluded that a person, adhan and iqama, is something that everyone, it's very recommended, very much recommended to do, to the point where the term that it's a responsibility was used. You should do it unless it's really... We went already over some of those hadith. I don't want to take up our time here. It's that important. We would have concluded that that is, it transcends gender, meaning the obligation or close to an obligation, or all that emphasis in terms of doing it is for both genders. Either way, it doesn't make a difference what the gender of the person is. But we come across these. The first hadith says there's no such obligation. Let's focus on that a little bit. She doesn't have an obligation. Does this mean she shouldn't do adhan and iqama? That's not something we can conclude from that. عَلَيْهَا أَذَانٌ وَإِقَامَةٌ. Does she have that on her neck? Is it on her shoulder? Is it a responsibility? Remember all that emphasis we had. I just mentioned some examples without mentioning the Arabic. The gist of the hadith was you should do it. A lot of emphasis that you need to do it. This hadith, Jamil ibn Darraj asked the Imam, is that... all that emphasis, this responsibility, it's so much, we know it's a recommendation, but it's so much that it's referred to as a responsibility, that type of wording is used. Is that on a woman as well? The Imam says, no, that's for men. That's what we understand from the first hadith. The second hadith, according to the chain of transmission, Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhi has said, for a woman, remember the adhan and iqama were both very important, but the one that was an absolute must, although as we emphasized, all of that is in the context of a mustahab act, not in the context of something that is potentially wajib. It's not wajib, it's never wajib. Okay, but the emphasis is, even in the cases that you just can't do both, at least do the iqama. So there was more emphasis on the iqama. Here the Imam says the iqama of a woman is to say, and to kabbira wa tashhada an la ilaha illallah wa anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. This is the iqama of a woman. Now, I am not the marja that any of the audience here is following, and so whatever my understanding is, in terms of practically any brothers or sisters that want to perform what is their Islamic recommendation or wajib, they need to go to their marja. We're having a discussion here. If anybody wants to send a question, get clarification on certain things, it's up to them if they want to do that. But they cannot take the view of someone that they haven't identified as their marja and follow that just haphazardly. You can't do that. You can sit in a discussion and hear an opinion. There's nothing wrong with that. And then practically in the end, as the Maraja generally have said, and this is a view that the Maraja have, that if a person hears that something is good Islamically, they are allowed to do that with the hope that it perhaps is Islamic. They can't conclude that it is. They can't do it with the intention of istihbab, if we were talking about that. And perhaps to a degree we are. We're going to be elaborating on that. But in terms of saying that, oh, you know, this speaker who may be a mujtahid, may not be a mujtahid, whatever, he's saying that this is a mustahab thing. Okay. Well, you need to ask your mujtahid, the one you follow, your marja, in other words, and see if they classify it as mustahab or not. If they do, and say it's mustahab, do it with the intention of mustahab. If it's wajib, do that. If it's not, and there's just a recommendation, you're allowed to do that, not taking it as a mustahab, rather they call it with the intention of raja. Raja means hoping that it's true. I haven't been able to see that this person is strong enough, or even mujtahid, or strong enough in their ijtihad for me to follow them compared to the other mujtahideen, or compared to the one that I'm following. But he said, this is what the hadith said. Your mujtahid, your marja, whether it's Atla Khamenei, Atla Sistani, the different marja, they generally have this. If you hear something attributed to Islam that doesn't tell you to do something that is haram, something that just didn't know, maybe, maybe not, you can do it with the intention of raja. Beyond that, no, you can't do that. So this is for the audience, discussion to hear how things work in this regard and how conclusions are drawn. And then in the end, what is suggested, if any recommendation is mentioned from this, is an understanding that's given from this, then people can do it with this thought that maybe it is the case, and with the intention of raja, they can do that. That's regarding the practical side of things. Then there's an important theological, if I may call it, a discussion here relevant to the general topic of women in Islam and the way they are seen and viewed by Muslimin, based off of hadith and verses of the Holy Quran. I will elaborate on that. But right now, just the practical side of things. I mentioned what the understanding, the word-for-word translation is. And so, according to that, we can easily conclude that all that emphasis that called it a responsibility is not there. Okay. Now, is it still mustahab? It's not so much emphasis for a woman, but it is there. She can do it. Okay. It's not bad for her to do it. And it's not neutral. It's good, but it's just not all that emphasis for the first hadith. For the second hadith, if she doesn't have time, she doesn't want to do the iqamah, the bare minimum that we can take is, okay, for this to negate all of the hadith about the emphasis of adhan and iqamah, and to say that all of that is for men. For women, they're not allowed to do that type of adhan and iqamah, the full-fledged adhan and iqamah. That's very hard. It's actually impossible to take that understanding from here. What can be concluded is that when a woman is wanting to start her prayer, and perhaps she's preoccupied with all the rush of the work at home. There's many times that a woman that is taking care of the family center, the family base, the place where all these people come together and find comfort, she's taking care of it and managing it in the various ways that she does. Things are in a crunch. And in that crunch time, she wants to do her prayer. She doesn't have time to do the adhan and iqamah in the full version of it. Her iqamah is Allahu Akbar, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. Begin the prayer and go through it quickly. Skip out on the other mustahabbat, because the mustahab that you're involved in terms of taking care of, and this is only an example, this isn't suggesting that, oh, women should be in the house and that's their only thing, and no, we'll talk when we get to the theological aspect of it, inshallah, we'll discuss that. But I'm giving an example and emphasizing, yes, the work, if a woman chooses to do that, that is a great recommendation. And you're not cutting down on your spirituality if you cut down on the iqama, as the imam mentions, and use three sentences, Allahu Akbar, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, and get on with the other work that you have, you're not cutting down on spirituality. And that is an important conclusion in the theological discussion. We will include that. So the practical, let me end this, the practical thing that we can say is, if a woman doesn't have time to do those, because we already concluded this doesn't suggest that there is no adhan or iqama, it's bad for her to do adhan or iqama. If she does it, it's bad, God dislikes it. That's not what the hadith is. It said, the first one said the obligation isn't there. In other words, all that emphasis pushing a woman to do it, no, that pushing is not there for a woman. It's there if she has time, if she wants to do it. Yeah, it's mustahab, it's dhikr of Allah, and it's good, she wants to do it. And from this one in context, again, since that is okay to do, then what is this? Her iqama is this? The understanding is this, that there are many cases that a woman would need something shorter, something a little more brief. Amongst women, especially at the time that primarily they would be engaged in that type of activity during that time. So a short version of iqama is given to her, that if you want to do the iqama, you don't have time, you can do it in this way. And the second hadith, the last point regarding the practical aspect, the second hadith is a clear sign that you can't conclude from the first hadith that iqama is not even good to do. That if it's not good to do, then why say there's a shorter version? It is clear in light of all the ahadith about adhan and iqama, the importance of it, and clearly from them, we don't understand that to be gender-based, is to suggest that for a woman, in her conditions, it's the emphasis pushing her to do the adhan and iqama, that is not there. And also, there's a short version of iqama, if she has time for even the short version that she has recommended, don't entirely skip on it, at least say three sentences and move on into prayer. This is the practical. Now, back to the point regarding marja'iyyah. This is somebody that is giving this to you from a hadith. This is a matter of expertise. So what the listeners, based on the fatwa of the marja', can conclude, if the marja' don't have this in their books of fatwa, which I haven't seen this particular point, they generally say it's mustahab. They don't distinguish between male, female, gender. It's gender neutral, whatever. You're male or female, it's mustahab to do adhan and iqama. That's generally what's found in the risala. So based on that, then doing this for a woman that chooses, that wants to choose this, is it haram for her to do this? No. She can do it with the intention of raja. Now, the theological discussion here, there's a few points I would like to make. The first point is, this is a general point, not limited to these two hadith, but I think in ways it is applicable to these two hadith as well. We have got to be very, very cautious of extrapolating, of drawing conclusions from hadith, and we have to be very conscious of where this conclusion comes from. Is it from the wording of the hadith, one way or another? Can it be attributed to the wording of the hadith? Or is it an assumption that is made, that which means that it doesn't come from the wording, it's just what it says brings to the mind of that particular listener or reader, makes them think that an assumption they had has been validated here, and that's a big mistake. I'll give you an example. I've mentioned this as an example before. I'm going to mention it again because I feel this is a very critical point here, and we are living at an age that we have got to split hair and be very meticulous with religion. We have got to make sure that religion is what God revealed upon the Prophet and was handed to us through the verses of the Quran, the sayings of the Prophet, the sayings of the Ahlul Bayt, nothing but that. There's a great scholar that I very much respect in the tafsir of the verse of the Holy Quran. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان إن سورة النساء بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الرجال قوامون على النساء بما فضل الله بعضهم على بعض. This is one verse. I'll mention a couple of verses as examples because the assumption made there is relevant to all of these, and he unfortunately mentions the same point here in these various verses. That's one verse, keep that in mind, in Surah An-Nisa. There's another verse in Surah Baqarah that talks about divorce. At-talaqu marratan. It starts, the verse starts with that. And then a little further down in the verse, it says, وَلَهُنَّ مِثْلُ الَّذِي عَلَيْهِنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَلِلْرِّجَالِ عَلَيْهِنَّ دَرَجَةِ. Okay, now those are the Arabic wordings. You can search them up. And I'll give a brief translation of those two verses and then the wrong assumption that's made about them. The first verse, which was in Surah Nisa, An-Nisa, it says, Ar-Rijal, men qawwamun. Qawwam is the plural of qayyim, and it's from that scholar that I very much respect, and he's correct about this. It's very clear. Qawwam is the plural of qayyim. It means that men have the responsibility of caring for women. بِمَا فَضَّلَ اللَّهُ بَعْضَهُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ. Based on what some of them have been preferred over others. وَبِمَا أَنْفَقُوا. And based or through, both of them, those words can be, I'll elaborate. بِمَا فَضَّلَ اللَّهُ بَعْضَهُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ وَبِمَا أَنْفَقُوا. The same wording is there. Based on or through what God has given some more than others, فَضَّلَ اللَّهُ بَعْضَهُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ. And then, وَبِمَا أَنْفَقُوا. And based on what they have been, what they are going to give financially, بِمَا أَنْفَقُوا. So, that's exactly what the verse says here. Right? There's a line there, what God has preferred or given more to some over others. That line is there. He concludes that the care that men need to give to women is because men have more intellect, stronger intellect, they're more intelligent. Great scholar, this is what he concludes. He says, this verse says, because some of them have been preferred. Some have been given more of something compared to the others. He concludes, this is aql. Does the verse say aql? No. It says, with something or through something, that God has given more to some over others. The assumption is made that this is aql. Now there's more problems with that. I don't want to get into that verse, because it's clear with many, many indications within the wording of it, it is not comparing men and women there. There is a segment of the verse that has to do with the responsibility of men in the marriage towards their spouses and the responsibility of the spouse towards her husband. There's two segments. One deals with the first. This is dealing with the men, and it has everything to do with what some men have more than others, not comparing men and women and say, men have this responsibility towards women because God has given men something more than women. That whole thing is a misunderstanding there. But besides that, even if we were to accept that men are responsible to take care of women, to assume that that's because of the intellect is really an assumption. There's nothing that is mentioned there. To say that's the only reason, it's obvious, it's clear. Rationally, there's no other reason. That is not the case at all. That is absolutely not the case. How do we have such knowledge? Why is it that God specifies things in cases that are more evident than this? And then in this case, if that's what's being spoken of, he just decided to skip on the term aql. That is not the case. It isn't this obvious thing. Obvious to whom? If we were to even accept it, as we said, the problem goes further, and the comparison is not between men and women. It's something that some men have more than others. One of the clear signs is that the pronoun used in ba'duhum and the other ba'd is both masculine. And that can't be a comparison between men and women. It should have been, if that were the case, it should have been bima faddalallah al-rijal ala nisa. You can't use masculine pronouns where one side of this comparison is only men and the other side is only women. You can't use that type of pronoun. Anyhow, and other signs as well. The assumption is made to validate the other. Women are deficient in their intellects. That's an assumption. We have to be very careful with that. In the other verse, the same assumption is made in Surah Baqarah, in that verse that we recited, وَلَهُنَّ مِثْلُ الَّذِي عَلَيْهِنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَلِلْرِجَالِ عَلَيْهِنَّ دَرَجَةِ. For them, women, is like what's against them. In other words, there's, as that scholar mentions, and it seems so far at least to be a correct understanding, the rights and responsibilities are balanced. There are certain responsibilities that are given, and then for them, in their favor, is what's on their shoulders. They're similar. In other words, what's in their favor, which are their rights, carries a similar weight compared to the weight of what is on their shoulders, responsibilities. There's a balance of rights and responsibilities. People are not given more responsibilities and less rights. You have to do more and you don't have as many rights. You're restricted. There's a balance there. It says that with regards to women. And then it says, وَلِلْرِجَالِ عَلَيْهِنَّ دَرَجَةً. When you compare men and women, men have more responsibilities and therefore more rights. There's an assumption. This part he concludes from the wording. And so far I don't have anything against that. I don't want to discuss that part. But to say the reason, that's where it becomes more relevant to this. In both those cases, an assumption. The reason is deficiency in intellect. Because they have more intellect, men, they have been given more responsibilities. And because they've been given more responsibilities, they're given more rights as well. So the balance compared between men and women, there's more rights and responsibilities for men in a marriage compared to women. Why? Intellect. Well, that's an assumption. Say, well, that's obvious. I mean, why else would God put this? We don't know. Who says we know these things? There is no mathematical equation that we can put that verse through and say the math tells us that this can only be 2 plus 2 can only be 4. There is no such mathematical equation there. To see that and say, well, you know, there's got to be a reason. The only thing I can think of is intellect. And that must be it. No, we can't do that. We are not allowed to do that. That's what can easily happen here. Some of us, unfortunately, along with men, some women have this problem as well. And I can't blame, I don't know who to put the blame on, but this is a problem. Okay, this is a problem. Some people blame it on men. I don't know if I can blame men either. I just don't know. I don't know who to put the blame on. This is a problem. It needs to be resolved. It needs to be taken care of. We have got to combat this. These myths about religious understandings. You come across that. Is there adhan and aqama? All this great stuff about adhan and aqama, and then you come across this hadith that says, do women have that? I was like, no. I'm like, oh, okay. Women are spiritually deficient. That hadith, by the way, seemed to say they're naqisatu ad-deen, or they're deficient in their deen as well. Oh, this confirms that. Well, that we already discussed that those hadith are not true. They go against clear teachings in the Quran. That's definitely not the case. And if this were to confirm that, we would put this away as well and say this contradicts the Quran. The issue is that is an assumption. It's an assumption. The same way that in the Quran, it's clear, that's Quran, it doesn't contradict the Quran, it's the Quran. The right to divorce is given to a man, not to a woman. That's clear in the Quran. But to conclude from that, that means women are less in whatever way. One way that that scholar had mentioned is intellect. I don't care about that way. That is not true. Any other thing you put in there that you say, oh, women are less in value than men, that is all an assumption. A responsibility given or a right given does not conclude or does not prove, does not suggest even that one gender is better than the other. Just by the mere fact that you're a member of this gender, then you have a better chance to progress towards Allah just because you're a man. No. The clearest verse in the Quran on the topic has given us a clear line of guidance. Inna khalaqnakum min dhakarin wa untha wa ja'alnakum shu'uban wa qabaila lita'arafu. Inna akramakum 'inda Allahi atqakum. Gender, race, ethnicity, language, color, none of that is going to cause you to be better or worse. It is your taqwa, and that is it. The taqwa of a woman in the case of divorce, if they get married in the bare minimum way of marriage, the basic marriage, without any further conditions, the taqwa of a woman is, I don't have the right to divorce. And so if those parameters are there, for me not to go and get a judge, a Muslim jurist, to divorce me, for me, even if I don't like it, that and you know, I make it work, even if I don't like it, that's her taqwa. That is her taqwa. Of course, if it falls in the parameters that she has every right to go to the jurist or to go to her husband in the case of khula, she's supposed to go to her husband and say, look, just the things that have happened, I can't live with you anymore. We got to do this and bring this to an end. And at least there's a recommendation, if not an obligation, because I haven't seen any of the maraja have an obligation, but there's hadith there. The husband, in that case, when they have their conversation, not that, oh, you want it, okay, here we go. No, you have to preserve marriage. You have to, both sides have to keep it together, unless it really can't work out. There's a lot of verses clearly suggesting that. Try to keep it together. So many verses. Men, one way, women, a different way. The point is, I mentioned those points so that nobody gets carried away with an example and goes off on a tangent. Since I'm not discussing those side points, I'm not emphasizing, I'm not doing a comprehensive discussion on them. These are examples. If a woman is not given the rights to divorce, that doesn't mean she's less. To conclude that is an assumption. There's nothing in the wording of that verse in any way, from the beginning to the end, that suggests anything about one being better than the other. That's all an assumption. The rights and responsibilities in the context of marriage for a husband towards her wife, his wife, to be more than the wife towards her husband, does not mean she's less than him. He just has more responsibilities and more rights in the context of marriage. Is he better? No. No. And this is not in the context of everything. It's just in the context of marriage. Not the entire lives of people. I want to take that. Oh, she is less. You look at this hadith. Oh, she doesn't have adhan naqam. It's women, you know, women. Al-ayadu billah. Astaghfirullah. Anyone who says that, thinks that even. The iqamah of a woman is to say these women, they can't do it. It's just... Astaghfirullah al-Azim, bite your tongue. You just attributed a lie to the Imam. That's not what the Imam is saying. What, Shaykh, can you tell us, what is the reason then? Do I know? Did I say these? What is clear is that those ideas that have come to the minds of people are not stemming from the wording of the hadith in any way whatsoever. So don't attribute them. Why is this? Multiple possibilities come to my mind. This is one of the next points regarding the theological aspect. Who says that we are going to understand the philosophy behind these rules, behind this guidance? Why is it that women are told in the context of salah, all this importance, adhan, so much importance, women, it's not stressed as much. Why? I have no idea. I don't know anything. I can only know what hadith tells me. To add anything to it, thinking like, oh yeah, I have this wisdom, we have this hikmah. It's clear the imam says it for this reason. Are you in his mind? Do you have some form of spiritual connection with the imam that you can prove? The imam just said that. It's a practical thing. For what reason? I don't know. The imam didn't explain anything regarding that. If he did, we would have said, okay, this is what the imam said. So the second point and last point regarding, I think they may have gotten mixed up. Don't add assumptions was the first point. Be careful. Be very conscious of where an understanding comes from. It has to stem from the wording of the hadith. If it doesn't, it's out. It's an assumption attributed to it. I think maybe it's for this. Keep that tongue. Maybe doesn't count. That maybe does not stem from the wording. If it's a maybe that the wording is vague, it's basically saying I'm confused and will come to hadith, I will tell you, the wording is in a way that, I don't know, maybe it's my deficient Arabic. I mean, I'm not an Arab, I don't claim to be an Arab. But from whatever I've studied in Arabic, this wording is not clear to me. I'll just say this might be the meaning, that might be the meaning, because those words can have either of those two meanings. Okay, you can say maybe this. But there's nothing in the wording regarding women being less or spiritually this or that. There's nothing in there. So we have to be careful. That was the first point. The second point that puts us in the trap of getting to the first point is this, that we think that we need to come up with the reason. There is a reason for this. We need to figure it out. Yes, there is a reason for it. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is Hakim, is Alim, and as Hakim, he is wise and he knows everything and doesn't do things for no reason. Every little thing, the tiniest thing is for a reason. That's true. But does that mean I'm going to figure it out? No. If I could figure it out, why would I need God's guidance about what to do? I could figure it out on my own. This is good, that's not good. The whole point that we rely on him and his guidance is because we can't figure it out. We don't know. So whenever a ruling is given, the fact that, oh, it's got to have a reason, let's figure out what the reason is. What does that mean? Did you make the rule? If we put ourselves in the trap, and I've seen, unfortunately, ulama falling into that trap, want to explain, justify the rules by saying, this is from God. He knows and I don't know. Say, maybe this, maybe that, I don't know. In these cases, there could be some benefit. For those who think there's absolutely no benefit, you could say, well, there are these thoughts about this benefit here, that benefit there, but I don't know if that's the reason for it. What we should insist and emphasize on, for those who question these laws and how valid they are, is that, look, if they are from God, then they are right, and no matter who says whatever else, God's word is more accurate, more wise, and not even comparable. A'yadhu billah for me to even compare God's word and his judgment to anyone else. No one can be compared. And the question of is it from God or not is not answered by, well, what's the difference between fish with scales and without scales? Okay, that's not how you determine is it from God or not. He sent us a book. In it he said, عَسَىٰ أَن تُحِبُّوا شَيْئًا وَهُوَ شَرٌّ لَكُمْ وَعَسَىٰ أَن تُكْرِهُوا شَيْئًا وَهُوَ خَيْرٌ لَكُمْ. You may like something, it's bad for you. You may dislike something is good for you. Wallahu ya'lamu wa antum la ta'lamun. God knows and you don't know. And it's very simple. Logic tells us that I don't know. After all these millennia, as much as we have advanced over the last few centuries in terms of knowledge, we have no clue even this basic coronavirus, how it functions. I want to figure out why God said this or that. What the effect of it is on the soul of the human being, that none of these scientific discoveries have anything to do with the human soul. It's all material. We shouldn't fall in the trap of thinking that we can and therefore should figure out on our own what the reasons are. We just don't. And if we think we need to, then we are going to fall in that trap. We will end up assuming, like, it sounds like this is the reason. No, it doesn't sound like that. It just tells us this is how God's emphasis for Adhan is for men. Do women too, it's good. It's good for everybody. But all that emphasis for women, for women it's not there. And for women, if you obviously in the context, meaning all the emphasis on Adhan and Iqama, and knowing based on that, that it is good, it's just not emphasized as much, it's not a responsibility. And it says her iqama is this, it means that she is perhaps even encouraged. Again, I'm not drawing any practical conclusions as a marja to give anyone. Therefore, I'm not exploring some of the other ideas. But maybe even one could say this is, maybe somebody would understand this to mean that it's better for women to say these three sentences instead of iqama. When it says her iqama is this, from the first one, it doesn't say that Adhan and Iqama are bad, or that they're not recommended. It's not put on their shoulders as a responsibility. If they choose to do it, great. If they don't want to, that's fine. There's a difference between those two. And then this last one, we said it may be if you don't have time to do that, or somebody else may come and conclude that it's actually suggesting to women for their Iqama to say this. That's not what I understand. But anyhow, even if it goes to that degree, it's still those other wrong understandings are not going to be acceptable. And we went on a tangent there, but it was necessary, I think, because that point is a very important thing. And also in this particular case, I didn't want anyone to go away with any type of wrong understanding from the hadith. Moving on to hadith number 20. Muhammad ibn Yahya an Muhammad ibn al-Husayn an Muhammad ibn Ismail an Salih ibn Uqbah. Muhammad ibn Yahya, we've already mentioned, that's Sheikh Kulaini's teacher. Muhammad ibn Hussein is, if I remember correctly, Muhammad ibn al-Hussein ibn Abil Khattab. This is a very great scholar, narrator of hadith. Muhammad ibn Ismail is this Muhammad ibn Ismail, obviously is different than the other Muhammad ibn Ismail that we had in like hadith number 18. That Muhammad ibn Ismail was a teacher of Kulaini. This one is the teacher of the teacher of the teacher of Kulaini. So their timing doesn't match up. This one is Muhammad ibn Ismail ibn Bazi'a. He's also a very well-known scholar. We actually, as far as my readings go, and by no means have I exhausted all the resources, but I have looked around a little more than just a little bit. And he seems to be a little more well-known in terms of his background and where he lived and so on and so forth. Muhammad ibn Ismail, which is ibn Bazi'a, an Salih ibn Uqba, as far as I can remember, he also, there was no issue with him, an Abi Harun al-Makfuf, I don't remember him, it doesn't ring a bell to my mind, I may have even checked him, I can't clearly remember something, the name sounds sort of familiar, but I don't remember anything particular, so I can't really comment on who he is, but again, it's highly unlikely that there's trouble there in regards to that link. Based on the view that you need to establish withaqa and find someone calling him withaqa, there might be an issue there. Anyhow, قال Abu Abdullah عليه الصلاة والسلام. He quotes Imam al-Sadiq صلى الله عليه يا أبا هارون الإقامة من الصلاة فإذا أقمته فلا تتكلم ولا تؤمي or تؤمي بيدك. Iqama is part of the salah, is of the salah, to be more precise in word usage. Part of is a noun, part is a noun. Of is a preposition, min is a preposition. الإقامة من الصلاة. إقامة is of the prayer. فإذا أقمته, and so if you performed it, if you did that إقامة, فلا تتكلم, then don't talk. ولا توم بيدك, even don't even start using your hands to, you know, tell people things with by pointing, like bring me that thing or do this or don't do that or whatever. No, you've entered the salah. Now, obviously, iqama isn't part of the salah based on everything else that we've had in this chapter and in other chapters. It's not actually part of the salah, and it's very common to do that. When you say it's part of the salah in this way, it means it's like that. It's almost as though you have started the salah. In what way is it like that? In this way. Don't talk once you've completed the iqama. We had hadith that said during the iqama, don't speak. Now it says once you're done with the iqama, also don't speak. So I've done with the iqama and I haven't started salah. Let me have a conversation with this. No, don't talk. You have entered the salah, not the actual prayer, but you have entered that the environment, let's call it, of salah. Or in other words, making it simpler, and we understand it's part of the prayer metaphorically in a sense. And in what way is it like that? Why do you use that metaphor in this way? Don't talk. Don't do things that someone who's performing the prayer shouldn't do. We had other hadith, don't sit and do that. Don't be in a different direction. Don't be facing a different direction. Now, lastly on that, all of these are recommendations, okay? If you speak after the iqama, is all the rewards of the iqama, are they over? No, they're not over. Can I start the prayer without doing another iqama? Yes, it's allowed to start that over, or start the salah without entering that. Would that salah be okay? Yes, it will be okay. All these based on the clear understanding of the various mujtahideen throughout time, and the ahadith are pretty clear. This is emphasizing the importance of doing this. Okay, if you want to do the preferred method, it's that when you do your iqama, be facing the qibla, be in the standing position, don't talk to people between the lines of iqama. And once you're done with the iqama, don't talk, don't point to people. Consider yourself in the prayer, okay? In all those ways. Be in tahara, we had another hadith, be in wudu. Don't do your iqama and say, okay, now I need to go make wudu. No, already make your wudu before iqama. After you've made your wudu, now do your iqama and engage in prayer. And this was one of the hadith that we said will come later, and it will make it clear that you know, this is a general principle that explains why it was said for us not to be sitting or not be facing not to not be facing the qibla. In other words, face the qibla when you're doing the iqama. This is the general thing. Whatever applies to prayer in terms of direction, standing, speaking, and things like that, it's preferred that you implement those in regards to the iqama as well. Adhan was different. Next hadith, hadith number 21, وَبِهَذَا الْإِسْنَادْ عَنْ صَالِحْ ibn عُقْبَةِ. We had that particular person that was right before Abu Harun al-Makfuf was Salih ibn Uqbah. The same isnad, or the same sanad, those both words are used, the same isnad from Salih ibn Uqbah. In other words, Muhammad ibn Yahya and Muhammad ibn al-Husayn and Muhammad ibn Ismail and Salih ibn Uqbah and Sulaiman ibn Salih. This is another companion. I don't know, I can't remember anything about Sulaiman ibn Salih as, either. But again, it's very highly unlikely that it would be troublesome. عن أبي عبد الله عليه الصلاة والسلام from Imam al-Sadiq صلى الله عليه قال لا يقم أحدكم الصلاة وهو ماش ولا راكب. And again, the principle is mentioned in the previous hadith. None of you should perform the prayer. This is not إقامة. لا يقم أحدكم الصلاة. The salah itself. Not iqama for salah. You're not supposed to do your prayer while you're walking. Wala raqib, or you're riding an animal, or today cars. As a driver, right? As a driver sitting behind the wheel. Otherwise, there are times where you might be in a vehicle, but you're able to stand, like in the airplane, you're able to stand, you have all those positions, and yeah, it's traveling at 800 miles an hour, but you're not in a position different than what you would be in if you were on the ground. That's different. That's not what it's talking about here. It means like in the driver's seat, in the driver's seat, you're not in the standing position and you're moving. So in that way, movement. So while you're walking or you're riding, or when you're laying on the ground, laying down, you're not supposed to pray like that, right? Illa an yakuna maridan. Yeah, unless you're sick. Somebody is ill, they can't stand, they're supposed to be in the sitting position or in the laying position. وَلْيَتَمَكَّنْ. Now, the part related to iqama. وَلْيَتَمَكَّنْ فِي الْإِقَامَ كَمَا يَتَمَكَّنُ فِي الصَّلَاةِ. That was about salah. In iqama, do the same. Now, clearly, this is one of the other one hadith that make it clear. Iqama isn't part of the salah. He just talked about performing the salah, and then he talked about iqama. So it's not part of it, but it's the same as it. So in a sense, the wording is used that it's part of in the previous hadith. كَمَا يَتَمَكَّنُ فِي الصَّلَاةِ فَإِنَّهُ إِذَا أَخَذَ فِي الْإِقَامَةِ فَهُوَ فِي الصَّلَاةِ. Again, while in the same hadith, it said it's not salah. It says because when you start the iqama, you're in salah, you're in that state. That's your spiritual state, your position is that. Although in terms of the acts, it actually hasn't started. But your state of mind, your soul, you're in salah, so avoid those things. That's the explanation that we've been given. I believe this will be the last hadith, hadith number 22. Al-Husayn ibn Muhammad al-Ash'ari, from the Ash'ari clan. One of the teachers of Shaykh al-Kulayni, salam, rahmatullah alayh. An Abdullah ibn Amir, other scholar, I don't remember much about him. An Ali ibn Mahziyar, he is definitely very well known, one of the Ahwazi scholars that we have had. An ibn Abi Umayr. It's interesting, the previous time we had Ibn Abi Umayr, it was also an Ahwazi, it was Al-Husayn ibn Sa'id. Here it's Ali ibn Mahziyar and Ibn Abi Umayr. Ibn Abi Umayr, from what I can recall, he's Kufi. So they're not too close, but they're not too far either. You know, Kufa and Ahwaz, it's not like the cities of Khurasan compared to Kufa, much closer. Anyway, An Abi Ayyub, An Mu'adh ibn Kathir, I don't remember much to say about them. That's generally when I don't say anything, I don't remember much. From what I can recall, they're considered thiqa and reliable people. And based on the view we mentioned, they're not troublesome anyway. But I don't remember much about them to present. An Abi Abdullah alayhi salatu wasalam, from Imam al-Sadiq salamullah alayhi, قال, إذا دخل الرجل المسجد وهو لا يأتم بصاحبه وقد بقي على الإمام آية أو آيتان فخشي إن هو أذن وأقام أن يركع فليقل قد قامت الصلاة قد قامت الصلاة الله أكبر الله أكبر لا إله إلا الله وليدخل في الصلاة. If a man enters the masjid وهو لا يأتم بصاحبه, and he is not following sahibih, his companion, literally. I'm giving you a literal translation. We'll come back to this. This is the hadith that I said. This is actually even worse. I'm honestly not sure what this conversation is. The wording that we have received, the imam's wording, we don't know exactly. We weren't there. We have been told through this chain of transmission, this is what the imam says. At least as far as my understanding of the Arabic language goes, I don't know. There's something that I think some people would suggest, but I would say that's one of those assumptions. There's nothing clear, no clarity here, and therefore it would conclude that we don't know what this is. We'll move on. Whatever the Imam said, salamullah alayh, he knows what he said exactly, and if these words are his words, and if these are exactly his words, I'm deficient, I don't know, I can't understand this. Perhaps there was something in that context that they understood from that wording, that because I'm not in that context, I don't understand what they're referring to here. So anyhow, if he enters the masjid and he is not doing i'timam, i'timam is to follow someone. The person who leads is the imam. The person who follows, the verb referring to the act of the follower, is ya'tam. Okay, He's not doing itimam. He's not following sahib, his companion. That's one thing that happens. He enters the prayer. He's not following his companion. وَقَدْ بَقِيَ عَلَى الْإِمَامِ There is an imam, and there's what remains is one verse or two verses. So in other words, he's in the standing position, and I see what chapter he's reciting. He's got one or two verses left, and he will be done with his qira'ah. He will go to ruku'. So now, فَخَشِيَ He sees this is the position of the imam, and obviously he wants to join that congregation. He's afraid, in huwa adhan, if he calls the adhan, wa aqam, and he does the aqama, and yarka, the imam goes into ruku'. He will miss the qiyam. In this case, this is the description of the person, in a sense, the subject, the mawdu' of the hukm. What's the ruling? What does this person do? فَلْيَقُلْ He should say, قَدْ قَامَتِ الصَّلَاةِ Twice. That obviously, the aqama ends in this way. قَدْ قَامَتِ الصَّلَاةِ قَدْ قَامَتِ الصَّلَاةِ اللَّهُ أَكْبَرُ اللَّهُ أَكْبَرُ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا The imam, according to this account, seems to have said, instead of doing the adhan and the aqama, only do this part onwards, the last portion of the aqama, and then join. What does this exactly mean? I don't know. Why? The wording is fairly simple, but the wording itself doesn't make sense. It says, you enter the masjid and you're not following your companion. So if this is following in prayer, so who is this companion exactly? What does this mean exactly? You're not following that person, but there is an imam that's leading prayer, and you do want to join it, and there's nothing wrong with it according to the hadith, and you're going to miss that. So if I did want to follow that my companion, what would the situation there be? What does that exactly mean? Does that mean that, for instance, that we're going to let this prayer finish and then do our own congregation? I came into the masjid with someone else, and we saw that they've already progressed in the prayer. They're not at the beginning of it. Let's just do the prayer together. Well, if that's the meaning, the other ahadith seems to suggest not to do that. Join this congregation. It's better to do that instead of saying, we're not going to join this, especially since they're in the qiyam position and there's still a couple of verses left of the imam to recite. So to suggest that, that doesn't match up with other ahadith that we have. But in the wording of it, it's just not clear what exactly is this referring to. The other thing here is, says, in the case where you're afraid, if you do the adhan and aqama, you're going to miss the qiyam position. Well, for those who don't remember, I'll repeat, we had hadith that says, if you get to the masjid and the congregation is finishing their salam, they're ending the prayer, not in the beginning, not in the standing position, not in the first two rak'ah, they're ending their prayer, and you want to start your own prayer, it said, don't do adhan and iqamah. You have plenty of time, obviously. There's nothing to try to catch up to. The prayer is over. The imam said, don't do your adhan and iqamah. This one says, the congregation is going, and you want to join it, and because you don't have time to do them, this is the solution. So, suggesting, apparently, if I'm not misunderstanding here, that if you get there and you didn't hear the adhan or iqama, the imam, bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, alhamdulillah rabbil alamin. I got there, Allahu Akbar. The imam just started the prayer. I didn't hear the adhan or iqama. Apparently, well, you have time. So say, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. I'll do the whole adhan or iqama. And you'll be able to join that prayer in the standing position. And that's the right way to go. If you don't have time and the imam is going to go into ruku', then there's other issues that may be raised as well. I will suffice with that. And so I have questions. I don't know. I'm not clear on what the meaning of this is. So as we have been told in other hadith, when you can't make sense of a hadith, then you should say that I don't know. The imams who have perhaps said this, because it's not 110% that the imam said exactly this wording. But if the imam says this, I don't understand, I'll leave it to the Ahlul Bayt, salamullah alayhim ajma'in. We ask Allah to help us with the understanding of the words of the Imams, to get the guidance from the Imams, inshallah, the wording that they left behind, this great heritage. And we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to help implement them. Walhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen.